Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 3 issues for just £5. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today. Hello and welcome back to The Critic podcast. Where does the Labour Party stand on trans rights? Is fear of being transphobic now putting the party of Barbara Castle and Jenny Lee at odds with mainstream feminism? In this podcast, the feminist campaigner, writer and former Labour Party member Jo Bartosz talks to The Critic's political editor Graham Stewart about how the gender battle is shaking up British party politics.
Jo, you've written for the online edition of The Critic this week about the Labour MP Rosie Duffield. Rosie Duffield has found herself at the centre of a storm. What is her transgression?
Well, she liked a tweet by Piers Morgan, which shouldn't be enough in itself to warrant a pile on. But he had quote tweeted CNN, who had referred to women as individuals with cervixes, and one of her sort of eagle-eyed Stasi-like constituents pulled her up on it and accused her of being a transphobe and suggested that she needed booting from the party. And in response, she said, "What for knowing that only women have cervixes?" Now, I mean, I think it's really illustrative of how far women's rights have been pushed back, that saying something as as obvious as only women have cervixes is now a point of contention. But of course, that statement doesn't include those who don't identify as women who have cervixes. And that was her supposed transgression. I think she's received a lot of praise from those who have been absolutely desperate for somebody within the Labour Party to speak out about this, and also a lot of criticism. From my point of view, I'm actually slightly irritated that rather than making a positive statement somewhere where it might have made a difference, for example, you know, in Parliament, she's just been caught out for liking something a bit politically incorrect on Twitter.
How unusual is her experience? Is this part of a pattern of behaviour of targeting particularly Labour MPs, or has she just done as everyone in public life appears to do these days, occasionally start an unintended Twitter storm, which will pass as people's limited attention span goes on to the next outrage?
I mean, trans activists online are quite a sort of significant force. I think her experience isn't unusual. So it's not just online that this has been happening. So, for example, 3 years ago, there was Anne Ruslow, and she was a women's officer in Bexhill and Battle. So a lesbian, a lifelong feminist, trade unionist for 30 years. And she was pushed out of her role as women's officer, and the entire executive committee resigned alongside her because she was bullied by trans activists for, unsurprisingly, refusing to accept the idea that some lesbians have penises, which is a sort of logical endpoint of identity politics with regards to sex and gender. Similarly, there was Jennifer James. Now, she protested against and started a campaign to try and keep all women shortlists actually for women rather than for men who identify as women. And similarly, she was booted out the party. She was vilified and suspended. Then there's been Linda Bellos, who's a lifelong black lesbian and Jewish, so ticks a lot of boxes, and she was kicked out the party. Venice Allen, she was also kicked out the party. So, you know, there's been a concerted drive for the past few years to, well, purges, if you like, of women who step out of line.
Who's leading these purges? Are these individual activists in Labour constituency parties, or is it coming from the leadership downwards? Is the leadership taking any stand on this, or is it just leaving individual members to fight their own battles?
To be honest, I think the leadership have been incredibly weak on this. So, you know, you've got, and indeed sort of quite established MPs, so you've got Jess Phillips, who calls herself a gobby feminist, who's kind of stayed silent on the biggest feminist issue of our time. And then Wes tweeting today, I think, you know, he tweeted in support of Rosie Duffield, saying, you know, she didn't deserve to be mobbed online. Well, he was apparently created a list of suspected transphobes. And it's still a problem now. So, you know, that was a couple of years ago, but it's still a problem now. So Karen Ingala Smith, who runs quite a large women's organisation, she applied to rejoin the Labour Party earlier this year, and her application was rejected on the grounds that she was apparently transphobic online. So in effect, the Labour Party have been really weak on this. I think I had assumed it was perhaps something to do with momentum, or, you know, to do with the sort of far left elements that that have joined the Labour Party in recent years, particularly under Corbyn. But I don't think it is, actually. So when you look at it, you've got sort of Wes Streeting, you've got peers like Michael Cashman, you've got some quite long-standing and well-established people within the Labour Party pushing this absolute nonsense. And I think part of the reason they do so is because it's sort of the default, nice, let's be kind, liberal position. And I don't think they've really thought about it beyond sort of sloganeering, really. But obviously, when you think about it, when you look at, for example, the impact of saying trans women are women, and then you have male-bodied rapists in women's prisons, it becomes a little bit more complex. So I think telling people that they're hurting a vulnerable minority, the thinking or questioning is a dirty but a very effective tactic. So, but of course, once you start to question and ask, well, what is a man or what is a woman, the whole charade unravels very quickly, because when you take away biology, you're left with subjective feelings, which are based on 1950s stereotypes. So I think that's sort of part of the push to silence and to shame anyone who raises this, is because it's based on such absolute nonsense. So you've got politicians like Nadia Whittome, who said, you know, debating the issue itself was dangerous. And I think there's something particularly about the Labour Party that means it's an ideal breeding ground for this sort of thing, because obviously it's got a history as promoting liberation struggles and liberation groups, you know, quite a proud history in many respects. But transgender rights are perhaps a little bit like pie in this regard. They're not progressive, but have sort of attached themselves on to the rights of lesbian, gay and bisexual people.
Jo, you were a member of the Labour Party until quite recently when you resigned on this issue primarily. When did, in your own experience, when did you start to notice the transgender becoming a very significant factor within Labour Party discussions?
So I think what did it for me was I think whilst I can still call him a man without being arrested, I will. So there was a 19-year-old women's officer elected called Lily, formerly Liam Madigan, and he'd be quite obnoxious to women online. He was really not exactly a shining example of a young prospective politician. And Angela Rayner tweeted that she was going to keep the green benches warm for him. So I kind of got this feeling that the Labour Party were absolutely desperate to have a sort of token transgender MP, just as a sort of, you know, apotheosis of how woke they were. And I think that was the moment. And he was responsible in part for some of the complaints against Anne Ruslow, the woman I mentioned earlier who was bullied out of Bexhill. And I think it was at that point, and I met with the prospective parliamentary candidate in my constituency, and she just didn't understand the issues. It was bizarre. And she wasn't prepared to listen to them, or even to sort of constantly, there was just no attempt to even meet halfway, which was incredibly frustrating. And to be honest, I think as well something about the Labour Party, so having positions such as women's officer and all the rest of it, I think in principle it's obviously driven by by something that is a need to have more women in public life, and, you know, a recognition that there is a sort of democratic deficit, if you like. But those sorts of posts are obviously going to attract transgender women, or indeed men who call themselves women, because it's very validating for them. So, this is a problem within lots of similar roles. You quite often get transgender women putting themselves forward, because it's sort of, you know, personally quite validating.
And I'm very intrigued by something you said earlier about how the interest and support for trans rights, it's not a, you know, Corbyn momentum on one side and a, you know, Starmer or mainstream, if one can call it that, side of the party taking a different view. It seems to blur and transcend both sides in the party. Is it your sense that many people who would traditionally be or consider themselves to be feminists, nevertheless, they're attracted by the argument that's made that, you know, trans rights is the great cause today, as gay rights were in the past, or, you know, or equal rights for women as well, and that anyone, therefore, in the Labour Party or indeed beyond the party who is against trans rights is a reactionary standing in the way of people's right to express themselves and their lifestyle however they would wish?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sort of... one of the problems with feminism as a movement is, obviously, there's no single definition. But I suppose the thing I tend to ask myself is, who benefits? That's a pretty good rule to live by. And it's clear that when it comes to the admission of those who consider themselves transgender women into single-sex hospital wards, into prisons, into services that have previously been reserved for women, that's not progressive. That then starts to look a lot like, well, men's rights. And the reason those services exist is because men are, on average, more violent and more likely to, you know, commit sexual assault. So 98% of those convicted for sexual assault are male. And that's not to be disparaging towards men. That's just a fact. So I think once you sort of start to look at cold, hard facts of it, you realise that it's not about... It's not about sort of, you know, the rights of those who consider themselves to be trapped in the wrong body, which is, of course, scientifically impossible, medically impossible. It's about a sort of men's rights to access women's spaces. So, yes, obviously, there are those who call themselves feminist on both sides of this debate. But yeah, I think that's kind of my benchmark, is who benefits.
Well, Keir Starmer has said that the Labour Party is under new management. Has he brought any focus or clear guidance on this issue since he became leader?
No, I mean, yes, he's, it would be lovely to see him doing perhaps something similar as to his approach with regards to the issue of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party, because misogyny is absolutely embedded. Peculiarly, I mean, whilst I said it wasn't sort of focused on any particular faction within the party, there does seem to be more of more youth support for it. So I can see in a way they might consider it an easy vote ring enough, because I think if you haven't got the life experience to know why it's a problem, it's an easy one to get behind. So with regards to Keir Starmer, so during the leadership race, Rebecca Long-Bailey and Lisa Nandy both signed a pledge for trans rights, which notably Keir Starmer didn't. He signed another one instead, and he has sort of come out with the usual "trans women are women" tripe, but he's been a little bit more measured about sort of going both feet in. And I suspect that's probably because, you know, as a lawyer, he's aware that there are legal implications to statements like that.
So you're expecting a bit of fudge, really, from the leadership. And if that's the case, presumably the viciousness that's going on in the party more widely will continue as both sides try and press their claim.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both sort of, I think effectively all parties actually to some extent, because I don't think it's just the problem within the Labour Party, though it is, I think, obviously for the reasons I outlined before, more pronounced than the Labour Party. But yeah, I think it'll be a case of fingers in his ears and, you know, when the Gender Recognition Act amendments are dropped, as they're probably going to be, I suspect then he'll be able to, you know, blame it on the nasty Tories without actually committing to anything himself.
It's an interesting question for feminists to ask themselves who on this issue they should really vote for. It looked like under Theresa May's government that the Conservatives were moving towards reforming the Gender Recognition Act to make it much easier for the law to tie in with self-identity. And then with Boris Johnson, perhaps not everyone's obvious emblem of a feminist, but with Boris Johnson, the Conservatives seem to have rowed back from that. But the Lib Dems and the Scottish National Party seem to have nailed themselves very firmly away from what we might call a more traditional feminist view on this and towards a trans rights view. Firstly, is that generalisation fair? And secondly, if it is fair, what are feminists beginning to think of in terms of their political choices?
I think that that many feminists feel absolutely let down by the main political parties. And interestingly, each of the main political parties now has a women's group of supporters who are campaigning to try and just sort of, you know, inject some sense with regards to the trans debate. So there's a Labour Women's Declaration, there's a Conservative Women's Pledge, there's a Green one and a Liberal Democrat one. There's even a Women's Equality Party one. So yeah, they have started sort of, well, we have started to sort of mobilise outside of the mainstream political parties because we feel absolutely sort of disenfranchised, absolutely sort of, you know, cut off from them. With regard to the Liberal Democrats, they've doubled down on support for transgender rights, or so-called transgender rights. So Lynn Featherstone last year, she said that feminists weren't welcome if they opposed the reform of the Gender Recognition Act within the Liberal Democrats. And obviously then there's Leila Moran, so she considers herself pansexual and claims to be able to see the souls of transgender people. That was something she actually claimed in a debate in Parliament. So obviously they're not an option. With regard to, it is a problem within the Conservatives as well. But I think something that's increasingly happening is so you've got like Standing for Women. They're a sort of new group, been going for a few years, who sort of have started to speak at Speaker's Corner on a regular basis, just to try and get the word out there, because it feels like sort of political options have been shut down. Then there's Women's Place, so they've sort of pushed for quite a long time to try and get the Gender Recognition Act to be discussed openly, because nobody in Parliament had the guts to do it. And I suppose the thing it keeps making me think, I mean, I can't help thinking anyone who is still any woman in the Labour Party at the moment must be a bit of a masochist. So there's a quote which I rather like from Susan B. Anthony. So she was a women's rights campaigner in the US around about 150 years ago. And she said, "No self-respecting woman should wish or work for the success of a party who ignores her sex." And I sort of think that's something we're seeing more and more women are sort of just turning their back on mainstream parties, sort of trying to lobby them from the outside on this.
So there is a danger that for many women, they are actually going to not necessarily disengage from politics, but disengage from party politics.
Yes, absolutely. I think, I mean, to be honest, I have no idea how I'm going to vote in the next election. And most women that I speak to of similar opinion feel very much the same. It's it's you know, and that's from being a to be honest, though, in some respects, having sort of broken away from the Labour Party over this issue has made me question other issues, which I'm rather thankful for in a way. But but yeah, I think each party has been very much captured by the trans lobby. And I find it absolutely bizarre, this claim that they're a sort of vulnerable minority, when, you know, every corporation, every protest movement, every political party has trans rights at the centre of its agenda. It's really quite strange.
Well, strange times indeed. Jo Bartosz, thank you very much for sharing your experience.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on. Lovely to speak to you.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Critic podcast, why not subscribe to have the magazine delivered to your door? Subscribe today with the offer of 3 issues for just £5 by heading to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk.